I got you. No, I got rhythm. I got.
No. Fozzie, hold one second. Let me make one little change here. Okay, I'll sing.
Yes, sir.
I don't got rhythm.
30 years after the untimely loss of Muppets creator Jim Henson, four legendary Muppet performers will reunite online this Saturday, May 16th, for a live stream event to help raise funds for frontline workers who have battled the COVID-19 crisis. Bill Beretta, Fran Brill, Dave Goles, and Frank Oz will take part in the live discussion, which also invites fans to submit questions in advance that may be answered during the event. The reunion of the Muppet performers, who also appeared in Oz's acclaimed documentary Muppet Guys Talking Secrets Behind the Show The Whole World Watched, is scheduled to begin at 4 o'clock. To tell us more, we welcome the legendary Frank Oz, whose Muppet characters have included Miss Piggy,
Kissy Kissy,
Animal,
Fozzie Bear,
Waka Waka,
Cookie Monster,
We Can Have Cookies,
and Grover, just to name a few.
Anybody knows that.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Frank Oz to the roundtable once again. Thank you very much. Good to talk to you again.
Wow. I'm impressed by myself. What an introduction.
You should be impressed with yourself. By the way,
I just want to make sure that people know that the 4 p.m. is actually Eastern Time.
Eastern Standard Time. That's right. You do it in the afternoon. And so what you did, the original, obviously, the Muppet Guys Talking. And so when did this idea start to surface?
Well, actually, it was my wife, Victoria Lebaum. She said, you know, Jim's 30th anniversary of passing is coming. Maybe we could do something with the guys again and maybe lift people's spirits. And then after about a day or two, she said, hey, why don't we also make it a fundraiser? And so that's where it came from. And so it's just a mom and pop. It's just she and me and the guys and some friends. So it's not a big company doing this. We're just trying to let people know about Jim and his work a bit more. With Muppet Guys Talking and other areas, we've always talked about Jim, but not focused in on his work. And this is specifically about Jim and his work. And so when people go online to, again, MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim, which I'll mention again, but they'll have a chance to ask a question. We won't be able to answer all because there's a lot of people signing in. But that's where it came from, and it was just an opportunity to do two things, to honor Jim and to hopefully lift some spirits and help people.
You mentioned in Muppet Guys Talking about one of the things you say about Jim Henson is that he was fearless. Give us a sense of that, of what it was like to work with that, because Dave Goles also in that documentary said that he was a force. So what's it like to work with a fearless force?
It's like this. You're in the beginning, when I was 19, 20, 21, or even in my 30s, it'd be like Jim had this idea, which is impossible, totally impossible. I said, Jim, that's really going on. That's too much. And then he would gather us together, and he would do it. That's working with a force, basically. Whatever there was that he wanted to do, nothing was impossible. He just made it happen, and he had us there to support him. So it was that kind of thing that he broke all these barriers because there were no barriers for him. For him, everything was open.
And that, for you as a performer, must give you just tremendous freedom to figure things out.
Yeah. Well, as I said in Muppet Guys Talking, Jim gave us the opportunity to fail. There's never any repercussions from a mistake we made. It was always support, always the freedom to try new things, and he would always be there to support us trying things, you know. And if things didn't work, we'd talk about it, and we'd do it another way. It was a rare time to work with somebody who you knew you were always safe with.
Give us a sense of your origin story. How did the two of you meet? I know that you met at a puppeteer's a convention when you were just 17, 18 years old, right?
Yeah. I was 17. I'd never gone to one of these things, but I went and I did a little show. And Jim, who's probably in his mid-20s at that time with his wife Jane and his baby Lisa was in the carriage, I remember. They came, and they had already been 7 years in an award-winning show in Washington, D.C., Carl Sam and Friends, and he saw my show and I guess liked it, and we talked a little bit. And then about a year and a half later, when he moved to New York City to do the Jimmy Dean show and other things, he remembered me and asked me to come and try it for 6 months, part-time. I was 19 at that time, and I came, and I never left. It's just there. And part of this is nice is because it's not just about Jim, but this fundraiser aspect of it. Jim really loved New York City.
Yes.
And so we're really using this this fundraiser to help hospital, non-medical hospital workers in at Elmhurst Hospital. What happened was I read an article where three people died, just people who were doing their jobs at Elmhurst Hospital, been doing it for many, many years, and they were just unknown workers. And there's so many invisible unknown workers that we don't appreciate. And I wanted to bring them out in the open and say, hey, we know you're there. We really appreciate you. So the fundraiser is for that, and we're just using the hospital as an emblematic hospital for all the hospitals in the country because we can't help everybody. So it works nice because Jim's studio was in New York for so many years. And so using Elmhurst Hospital of Queens, which is a really hotbed of the virus, it kind of comes full circle, and just these people really need to be noticed, you know?
Absolutely. One of the things, and you're talking about Jim and his association with New York City, but I think so many of us, we just intuited that Sesame Street was New York, right? That was the center of it. It could have been anywhere, but that's where it seemed
yes.
like it was. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was designed that way to be in New York housing, not housing, but brownstones and such. So it was very much geared to New York at that time when it was its first design, and still is.
When you think about the work that the two of you did together, I mean, obviously, I mean, he created the Muppets, but you were there from the ground up.
I was there from the ground up in New York. I wasn't there in Washington, D.C. when it was him and his wife and Bobby Payne doing a show for 8 years. Once he moved to New York, yeah, that was me and Jim and Jerry Jewell and Don Soline.
That partnership of the two of you really becoming working so close together, and that's one of the things that you mention in the documentary, is just how close you all would work together and what those hours were like, and there was no such thing as 9 to 5. It was gym time. It was whatever it took to get it done. So that has to forge a very, very close relationship.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, when you're working 24-hour days and falling asleep on the set until somebody says, okay, action, when you're in the pit with your fellow performers, it connects you. But again, this all comes from Jim, because Jim taught us, I think, again, Jim never taught anything. Jim never philosophized or told us what to do. We just followed what he did, and we learned that working is fun. He loved working. The work for him was a joy to do something that he wanted to do. So because of that philosophy, we enjoyed the work, and we enjoyed being together, and we got closer and closer.
What do you think his legacy has become over these past three decades? Of not the Muppets, but of Jim Henson?
You know, it's hard because I was so close to Jim, and it's hard to step back, but certainly... I guess I'd probably use two words, something like generous creativity.
And
because he was always generous, and he was certainly the most creative man I've ever known.
And does that then guide the ship beyond him in the sense of even what you do for the rest of your life creatively, of that set the foundation, if you will?
Absolutely. You know, the biggest role models in my life were my mother and father. And then when I became 19 and joined Jim, then it became Jim. And Jim, it's not a cult by any means. You know, Jim was flawed like anybody else. But the manner in which he viewed life, the manner in which he lived his life, became us also. Because anybody who didn't work hard, who wasn't a good human being, they didn't last long. And so that kind of, you know, he liked good human beings. He liked people who delivered. And we tend to become that way. And we still have that in our hearts and our bones. That came from Jim, because I wasn't this way when I joined Jim. I was a much more limited human being.
Around, 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 over, and under, and through. That's what I'm teaching.
C is for cookie, that's good enough for me. Oh, cookie, 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 start with C. Yeah!
I don't want to play a game with rhymes.
Nice going, Bert. Oh, ring my chime.
I don't want to do it.
There's really nothing to it.
It's so silly.
A boy named Billy. Stop it,
Frank Oz is our guest, and we're talking about these legendary Muppet performers reuniting online on Saturday, May 16th, for a live stream event to help raise funds for frontline workers who have battled the COVID-19 crisis. It's going to be Frank Oz, Dave Goles, Fran Brill, and Bill Beretta. And of course, it's on the 30th anniversary of Jim Henson's death. Where were you when you heard of his passing?
I was in his office in New York on 67th Street. His assistant, who also was my assistant, came in and told me.
And it shocked the world. It was one of those things. I mean, I remember, it's one of those things where you remember where you were, and it shocked the world. And I can't even imagine what it did to you and for these other talented creators that were along for the ride with him.
I think it was, and it still is, profound.
Mm.
Yeah.
You talk in the documentary about this joyous competition between the two of you. That almost has to be the case, right, when you're working with someone on something that is so creative.
People probably view us Muppet performers as, you know, wonderful, kind, lovely, creative people who... And we're not that way. We're good human beings. We're very good human beings. Otherwise, we wouldn't be with Jim. But we're aggressive. When you're a performer, you have to be aggressive. If you're not aggressive, you can't become a main character. And so that kind of joyful aggression, trying to compete with the other person, is necessary. Otherwise, it's just kind of going to be flat. So that slight competition that we would always have, out of fun, never out of malice, is the very thing that causes main characters to be created.
This may be an impossible question to answer, but you also talk about this abandoned lunacy that Jim sought and wouldn't say it, would just say, let's do it again, and was looking for this abandoned lunacy. When did you know that you had it, that you would reach that pitch? Is that just something that you knew gutturally, that was what was needed?
Wow, that's a good question. I hadn't heard that before. You know, I joined when I was 19, and it took me many, many years to know what the hell I was doing, probably about 10 years. So in my 30s, I probably found out that I wasn't good enough to work with Jim for the first 10 years. I wasn't adept enough. And I think in my probably mid-30s is when I felt comfortable enough with my craft to let go and have more fun with Jim.
And in that having fun, you talk again in the documentary about some of your characters, of Miss Piggy being a three-dimensional character and Animal being a two-dimensional character.
Forgive me for being so forward, but I'm a liberated pig.
Were you able to figure that out on your own, or was that in conversation with Jim?
No, that was me. But it's always, you know, one doesn't work in a vacuum. It comes from the inside of me. It has to, because I can't do what other people tell me to do. But it also feeds the writers, and then the writers start writing something and adding something that I would never have added. And then Jim on the set will suggest something that I never thought would be for my character, and then I would include that in my character, and then I would think of something else that would make the character more alive. So it's that kind of combination.
You say that Fozzie Bear was a character, and it was one of my favorite lines in the documentary, that you say he doesn't have a key to the theater.
Right.
He's just, yeah, he's not going to succeed, and but he's never going to stop trying.
Tonight, I am going to use your assistance.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, sir. You and I are going to tell the world's funniest joke.
Is
all spontaneous, unrehearsed, right, Froggy?
It's unrehearsed, yes.
Okay, okay. Now, Frog of my heart,
yes.
You will just wait until I say the word here. When you hear me say the word here, you will rush up to me and say, good grief, the comedian's a bear.
Good grief, the comedian's a bear.
Check.
When you say the word here.
Right.
Gotcha.
Okay, now then. Hiya, hiya, hiya. You're a wonderful-looking audience. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good grief, the comedian's a bear.
Not yet.
But you just said here.
That was the wrong here.
Which is the right here?
The other here.
Sure.
Go, go, go. Okay. Hey, hey, folks. This is a story you're going to love to hear.
Good grief, the comedian's a bear.
Will you stop that?
But you said here.
Not that here.
Well, which here?
Another here.
How am I going to know?
You know when you hear.
Good grief, the comedian's a bear.
He will always try to be funny, no matter what happens. But he won't ever succeed either. That's very endearing.
It is endearing. In knowing that about the character, do you talk to Jim or to anyone else about that, or do you just do it and then realize that much, much later?
Exactly. I just do it and realize it later. Exactly. And again, I do it not in a vacuum. I do it when I improv with my fellow performers. You know, again, all this stuff, I'm one of the guys, last guy standing, and so I get all the credit, but the truth is nothing is done in a vacuum. Whatever success I have is a result of the give and take between my fellow performers and writers and Jim.
When you have a character that is such a part of you and then someone else starts to do it, does that affect you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It hurts, and it's a conflict because, you know, I could not continue my directing career and do the Muppets. I'd be gone for 9 months shooting in London or someplace, and I couldn't say, hey, nobody touch my characters, okay? You can't do that. So I had to give in, and I also had 4 young kids. But so I had to, and so Eric, who's a friend, does my characters, and also Billy does a couple of my characters, I think, and David Rudman, all these people I know and love. So they're friends of mine. So on the one hand, the conflict is I'm so grateful that they're bringing them alive still. I mean, thank God, otherwise, because I couldn't do it all. On the other hand, it hurts because they're mine and they're inside my heart. So it's a combination of gratitude and wanting to also do it myself. It's a combination. I'm just more than anything else grateful that Eric and the guys are doing it.
Bill Beretta, Fran Brill, Dave Goals, and Frank Oz, you'll all be sitting around, I assume, just as you were. You'll be home, but it'll be put together.
And
sitting around as you were in the Muppet Guys talking about Jim Henson, remembering him.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, for those who don't know about this documentary, it's called Muppet Guys Talking, which is just us sitting around talking about how it was working with Jim and the Muppets and the other performers. This one is going to be geared specifically to Jim's work. I'll just say it again, Joe, if you don't mind. Just
not at all.
Make sure people know that you guys can just go to MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim. MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim. It's all for free. We're not making money. The only money that we get, it goes to the Elmhurst Hospital Auxiliary Fund for the workers there. This is not like big business. This is just us thinking about this a week and a half ago and saying, hey, let's do it. So that's all. We just want to, as my wife said, she wanted to lift people's spirits, and we want to help people on the front lines.
The event is free. It's open to anyone around the world who remains inspired by Jim Henson. There is no charge to participate, but you will be encouraged to make a donation to this COVID-19 related cause. You must pre-register, as Frank mentioned, MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim. And it all takes place.
MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim.
Correct.
Jeez, Joe, you screwed it up.
I apologize. MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim. There you go. And Again, it all takes place 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday afternoon. Frank Oz, what a delight, as always, to speak to you. I thank you so much for the beautiful work that you have created and brought to our lives, and, of course, just the great thrill of speaking to you this morning. Thank you so much.
Well, Joe, thanks so much for talking again. It's nice to hear your voice again. Thanks
so much. Thank you very much. Again, the original Muppet performers reuniting tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m. in an online fundraiser to remember Jim Henson, where they will have a conversation about Henson to raise funds for COVID-19 frontline workers. You can find out more www.MuppetGuysTalking.com/Jim. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
And I am cute.